Harry Cruz isn't exactly a household name, but he made an indelible mark on American literature and Southern literature especially. Cruz was born in the 1930s on the edge of a swamp in Bacon County, Georgia. His family was very poor, and polio left young Harry with a limp that he carried for the rest of his life. The LA Times wrote in his obituary in 2012 that he was a literary kin to William Faulkner and Flannery O'Connor, but had less name recognition. A new biography hopes to change that. Ted Geltner is the author of Blood, Bone, and Marrow, a biography of Harry Cruz, and he'll talk about his book tonight in Atlanta. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.
First, can we kind of settle how to describe Harry Cruz? Because it's funny when you read about him how people sort of contort themselves to figure out how to label him. If you go in thinking you're going to read something that's similar to Faulkner, you're going to be surprised.
Right, right. Yeah, it's definitely different. And, you know, it's he was writing in his time, and you know, most of his books are set in what was the modern era, the 70s and 80s. So it's a lot different than you know, Faulkner and some of the other Southern greats of Southern literature. But Harry would say that he wrote about the people who pulled the carriages and pulled the plows as opposed to the people who told them to do so. So that was where he found his subject matter.
So he talked a lot about his upbringing. He wrote a very well-known memoir. And in it, he talked about they didn't have a lot of books. He was very poor. And so he said that he used to read the Sears catalog and imagine the lives of the people in that. What do you think he took from that kind of experience, as opposed to somebody who, say, would have grown up reading all kinds of other authors?
Yeah, that's part of Harry's story, is that he learned the art of storytelling more from listening to, you know, his kinfolk, listening to them share their stories of their upbringing and things like that, as opposed to learning through books. Once he did get his hands on books, he was, you know, an avid reader and became, you know, extremely well read. But that's his introduction into literature, was through storytelling.
Do you think that altered the way or influenced the way that he eventually wrote?
Well, I think for sure it became that was kind of the most important thing at the core of his writing, was always a narrative, or, you know, telling a story. And that's what he whatever else, whatever other meaning he put into his writing, he always thought that was the most important thing.
So I want to play a clip of an interview that he did with Terry Gross. And in this one, he's talking about how long it took him to find his voice.
I was trying to write about people who had families and who grew up in the same house, and about people who, if they were unfortunate enough to have hookworm and rickets, were able to go to the doctor. I take it as a moment of grace that one night, very late when I was working, it occurred to me that whatever strength I had was all back there in Bacon County, Georgia, with all that sickness and loveliness.
When did that happen in his life, when he started to really write about the people he'd grown up with rather than the people he thought he should be writing about?
Well, that happened when he was 30, or maybe a little past 30. He had always, he had spent kind of his early writing life working on novels and having very little success. I mean, he wrote dozens of short stories and several novels that really went nowhere. And at some point, he had that revelation, and he once it clicked, the next novel, the one that really was his kind of coming out party, The Gospel Singer, came really quickly. And that was he wrote it in 1966, and it came out in 1968. And from there, he was, you know, his talent was recognized, and he became a really prolific writer.
So he had a tattoo on his right arm that's kind of famous because he displays it often in photos. But it was a quote from an E.E. Cummings poem, and that said, "How do you like your blue-eyed boy, Mr. Death?" I wonder why you think he chose that particular quote.
Laughing in the face of death was, you know, his ethic. And I mean, there was a time, you know, when Harry, he lived very hard and people were predicting his death, you know, for years and years. And he used to say, you know, I'm going to outlive all of you. I mean, he'd say it in much cruder terms than that. Mm. But he really felt that you know, he was a fighter who was going to beat whatever obstacles were put in his way.
So since you mention it, let's actually go back to that 1988 interview with Terry Gross, because one thing he did talk about openly was, for example, his battle with alcoholism.
For the last 12 years, probably, I've been a really, really bad drunk. But it was a curious form of drunkenness. If I wasn't working, I wasn't a drunk. And then you say, well, no, wait a minute, that's stupid. You can't write and drink. Well, I know that. But I can stop writing and or get scared or warped or twisted and stop writing and get drunk for 3 or 4 days and nights or 2 weeks and then stop drinking and go back to it.
He wasn't necessarily a confessional type of writer except in his memoir, though. How much do you think of his personal life did he end up pouring into his characters?
I think he put a lot of his personal story, you know, not kind of exactly that, but I mean, most of the books that he wrote, or a lot of the books that he wrote, had a protagonist that really was kind of a Harry Cruz character. And
so, what is a Harry Cruz character?
Well, it was always an outsider, someone who was, you know, just didn't quite fit in, and you know, was searching to find his place, and you know, battling against obstacles, and you know, that was Harry. He viewed himself kind of as on the outside, and you know, and he even cultivated that. You know, I think it he felt that that's who he was, and that it helped him in his art.
Let's hear him describe a little bit about why he wrote, as he described them, freaks, people who had some kind of freakish abnormality about them. This is going back to that same interview on Fresh Air.
I know what it's like to have people look at you and their face mirror your own rather dreadful circumstances, that is to say, your freakishness. And sure, I felt like a freak there. But, of course, there were other times I felt freakish, too.
Some of his characters, and I always remember the novel Car, partly because I feel a personal connection in that a man tries to eat a car, which is a 1971 Ford Maverick, and that happened to have been the first car I ever owned.
Oh, wow.
and I would not have wanted to eat that. But the characters that he wrote about were freakish, but they also had their own sense of morality, don't you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was his... what he would always say is that, you know, freaks, as he called them, they couldn't hide whatever their abnormality was. You know, the world was kind of a mirror to that abnormality, whereas, you know, the rest of us, you know, which Harry, you know, felt that he was writing about, have all the same issues, but just it's not, you know, they don't wear it on their sleeve. So, you know, for his fiction, it was a technique that worked for him.
Did you read and enjoy the books of Harry Cruz before you thought about writing a biography?
I had never read Harry Cruz. I mean, I vaguely knew who he was. I was a newspaper reporter, and I got an assignment to write about him. They filmed a movie of one of his novels, The Hawk is Dying, in Gainesville, and I was writing for the Gainesville Sun and got that assignment. So the first thing I did was say, you know, I want to read The Hawk is Dying and see what this guy's all about. It had been long out of print at that time, and all of the copies had been stolen out of the library because Harry's books, you know, they're out of print, so you can get a lot of money for them. There was one copy in Gainesville, and I found that, you know, chewed up copy of The Hawk is Dying and read it, and you know, that was my kind of my introduction to him.
Let's hear actually a clip from the 2006 film, The Hawk is Dying. It stars actor Paul Giamatti in it. And then in this particular scene, the character is talking about the death of his grandfather on their farm in Georgia and how the flies started to be attracted to the body until a hawk approached.
He's like a streak of fire coming out of the sky, and he just hit him like a hammer, and he just ripped him apart. He ripped the sky open. Fierce son of a... So much damn force, and after that, there was nothing. Sky was just empty.
Why do you think he would never really became sort of a best-selling type of author? Why do you think, I mean, he has a really strong cult following for sure, but why did he never become that sort of Faulkner type of best-selling author?
Yeah, it's hard to say why his work didn't reach a wider audience. He always wanted to, but he was never, you know, willing to kind of change his vision, which was, you know, kind of dark. So he wasn't willing to change that, and that was part of it. And I think he also, on some level, took pride in it. I mean, there's a quote that I have from him somewhere where he says something along the lines of the more people that that appreciate your work, often, you know, the less good it is. You know, that's a paraphrase, but something along those lines. That he and I think on some level he was kind of writing for history, you know, and like he wanted his work to be remembered and to go down in literary history more than he wanted the sales.
Ted Geltner is the author of Blood, Bone, and Marrow, a biography of Harry Cruise. He will talk more about Harry Cruise tonight at 6 at the Wrecking Bar Brew Pub on Moreland Avenue in Atlanta. Ted, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much.